the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May the Lord's face shine on you.
It's time now for Faith in Action, the program that looks at how ordinary people incorporate their faith into their everyday lives. The program is underwritten by St. Vincent Health, providing the spirit of caring through 20 health ministries that serve 46 central Indiana counties, and by Marian University, offering Catholic and academic excellence in the Franciscan and liberal arts traditions.
May the Lord's peace be with you.
Welcome to another edition of Faith in Action. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host today is MJ Crowder.
Jim Ganley.
It's still just around the corner now.
Next week, I can't believe it's here. And I have ordered the weather. It's supposed to be spectacular.
All right. So we know who to hold responsible. What we're talking about is our golf outing, Catholic Radio annual golf outing, May 12th, Plum Creek Golf Club. Still have a couple of openings left if you'd like to golf as a individual or as a foursome. Still can make room for you. All you need to do is call us at 317-870-8400. Really getting close, though, so we're down to just days. Or you can register all by yourself at our website, catholicradioindy.org. And our phone number here, 870-8400.
And you don't have to be a foursome. We actually had someone call in the other day as a solo and wanted to join and wanted to know if we could fill them out. And we can absolutely do that. We've had several people call in. So if you have a buddy, so a twosome, threesome, foursome, onesome, call us. We'll fit you in.
We just had a father and son sign up a week or so ago.
I like that.
Yeah. And so, no, it does not have to be a foursome. Can easily be just a single.
A mother and daughter.
And you know, and it's a great way to meet some other Catholic business folks in the area as well. We start the day off with Mass at about 11 o'clock, then a quick lunch, shotgun start, lots of fun, lots of prizes, dinner catered by Sullivan's.
And free libations all day.
All day long from from the beverage carts.
Beverage cart. I like that. Some are adult beverage carts. Jim and I will be manning one, and the Typans will be manning
ours
another.
Ours will be the one going around small circles everywhere.
This is going to be fun. Between now and then, I'm taking a safe driver course on how to operate a golf cart. Okay, our guest today on Faith in Action, Mark Tuttle, returning guest, I should say. You've been our guest several times. President Right to Life of Indianapolis. Welcome, Mark Tuttle.
Thank you. Great to be here, MJ.
Do you know, every time I introduce you, I think of apples, of the Tuttle Apple Orchard.
Yes. No immediate relation, but, you know, the Tuttle name, we are a family that has been in the United States for a really long time. So there's a few of us around, and, you know, none of us seem to be immediately related.
Isn't that interesting?
I've been out to the orchard before. It's a fantastic place.
It's wonderful. Yeah, it is. I think of it mostly in the fall, but I took a group of homeschool kids out right about now in the springtime, and they were talking about the bees, how important it was that we save our bees because they are the reason that we have fruit and vegetables.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm an allergy sufferer, and I know that locally produced honey is essential for trying to keep the allergies at bay.
I'm with you. If I sound nasally, I'm right there with you.
We've talked to Mark a number of times about Right to Life of Indianapolis, but Mark, if you could just give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of the organization itself. I mean, the hierarchy, what it looks like. Do you have members? Is it a membership thing or what?
No, it's not a membership thing. You know, we're a 501c3 not-for-profit education organization, which means we have a board of directors, a 12-member board of directors. We think that Jesus got that number exactly right, 12. So, and then underneath, we have an office of 1.5 employees and a staff, really, of dozens and dozens of volunteers. So we're very much a volunteer-run organization. Our mission is to restore respect for human life from conception until natural death. And we particularly focus in on abortion because that's kind of the greatest crisis that we're facing in those issues. But we also deal with euthanasia and end-of-life issues and also trying to improve, I think, the life and respect that society has for those who are handicapped as well.
So, Mark, how frontline do you get? How frontline mind does Right to Life of Indianapolis get?
Well, I'm occasionally down at the State House dealing with the issues down there on a political level. But for the most part, we're a community organization. And so we're involved in promoting the 40 Days for Life vigils. We're involved in promoting a lot of what the other pro-life organizations do around. We kind of see ourselves as an enhancer and promoter to make sure that we're all kind of all having, I guess, as maximum effect as we can in the pro-life movement.
You know, I was recently, in fact, you'll hear from Casey Rising next week or the week after, I think, a wonderful pro-life Catholic doctor in this area. And I was on my way to her office the other day, and my daughter Anna is her new employee, nurse employee. And they said, so on your way, right before, like a mile before you get to the office, look off to the left and tell me if you can see Planned Parenthood. And I thought, well, you know what? It was hard to see it before, but you cannot see Planned Parenthood because of the beautiful Women's Care Center on the corner there with the pink shutters and the tall fence and the beautiful greenery. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you know, I've got to get over there and see that. Since we moved the studios, our studios used to be in the Pyramids, and I would drive by
right around the corner,
that location on a lunch hour to get a sandwich.
Yeah.
But I haven't been over there since we moved.
Oh, my goodness. And the crazy thing was, I have heard stories not only from the Women's Care Center, but from Tim O'Donnell and other people that they have had, that Casey put her office there on purpose. And that day they did have someone walk in that meant to go to Planned Parenthood, walked into the Women's Care Center, was sent down to Casey Rising's, and there she was right next to me in the office.
Yeah, it's fantastic the way that's worked out to have those types of pro-life resources right there next to Planned Parenthood. And even the building itself, that this beautiful building and complex that they've created stands in such a stark contrast to that Planned Parenthood building. I mean, the visual couldn't be better.
Couldn't be more stark. Couldn't be more different. Okay, so, you know, actually, I called you a couple weeks ago and said, hey, we need a Right to Life fix here at Catholic Radio. And it's been some time since we've had you kind of give us a state of the state.
Well, your phone call was very timely because there's been a lot going on, and it's been going on behind the scenes to a good extent. But, you know, the abortion industry itself tends to be hidden from view. And there's a reason for that. They want to keep what they're doing in secret and in silence. And so part of the goal is constantly to be trying to expose their deeds to the sunlight of truth. And we've actually had some help and assistance from the state of Indiana lately. So there have been some big victories on that front. Recently, the state of Indiana had their health surveyors go in and survey all three of the abortion facilities here in Indianapolis. And those, those surveys are they're public documents. They're available. So we looked at them and we were appalled by what we saw. I say we were appalled. We weren't exactly surprised, because we've always known that abortion is not really the cutting edge of medicine to a good extent.
Okay, so what kind of things are we talking about?
Well,
here?
We're talking about some, for instance, one of the abortion facilities, they were giving all of the patients the exact same maximum dose of a narcotic painkiller called fentanyl. Now, this should be prescribed according to weight of the patient.
Right.
And they were just giving it the maximum dose to everybody without weighing the patient. It was incredibly dangerous. There were difficulties in three of the four that we were looking at their surveys of them monitoring the vital signs of their patients, both during the operation and also in the post-op period. So things like that, along with some hugely unsanitary practices. I mean, practices with their laundry, where the dirty laundry and the clean laundry were, in the same place, surgical gloves not staying sterile in the slightest.
The idea of keeping abortion safe for women is lie. Yet again, another lie.
Exactly. We were always told that if abortion is legal, it will be safe. And these health surveys really show just how false that is. When abortion became legal, it wasn't like you had a big changing of the guard between those who had been performing abortions, as we were always told, the bad back alley abortionists, into these new, fresh new doctors right out of medical school doing abortions. That's not at all what happened. The same guys were doing abortions before Roe versus Wade as we're doing them after Roe versus Wade. And the only thing that really changed was we as a society now have a much harder time holding these guys accountable for their bad medicine than we did before Roe versus Wade.
You know, I wonder, Mark, and if you're just now tuning in, listeners, our guest today, Mark Tuttle, Right to Life of Indianapolis. I wonder if we have any information on how many abortions are done through Planned Parenthood type facilities, you know, suggestions that, or how many are done by, through private practice doctors, where you go to your doctor and you say, gee, I'm here for my 6-week checkup. And I'm pregnant again. What? You know, do we have any information about that?
In theory, we should. And I say it that way because in theory, we should. Every abortion that's performed in the state of Indiana, there's a piece of paper that is required to report back to the state.
And that medical procedure.
That medical procedure, every abortion. And so each abortion then, you know, the age of the mother, the gestational age of the baby, the type of procedure that's being done, the age of the father, all sorts of information is reported back to the state for statistical purposes. The ones we receive and the ones that are there are all from the freestanding Planned Parenthood type abortion facilities. We haven't seen all of them. So we haven't seen any from the physician's offices. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not being done there.
You know they're being done.
They know they're being done. But if they're being done illegally. And I think that's kind of a key. And I'm not sure how many physicians who are not abortionists are going to necessarily risk their medical career by doing things and skirting the law.
Sure, it'd be much easier just to do a referral.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think so most of the abortions, I think, are being referred to the abortion facilities to be done.
Oh, really? Is this a change in the last 20 or 30 years?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if it's much of a change. I think abortion has always, to a certain extent, been done on these facilities and somewhat by design by the abortion industry. They thought if they were able to set themselves up an independent sort of away from medicine at first, that they would be better off. They changed their mind on that, and they worked really hard to try to get mainstreamed back in with the mainstream of medicine, and they've been fighting that battle ever since.
Okay, I have to tell you a personal story when we come back. We need to take a break, and we'll be right back. Hi, this is MJ Crowder. I hope you enjoy listening to our Faith in Action programs here on Catholic Radio. Over the years, it's been my pleasure to interview some great guests and cover some very interesting topics. It's always a challenge to come up with fresh ideas for the programs. If you have an idea or two about a topic we could cover or a guest we could interview, give us a call at 317-870-8400. 317-870-8400. Welcome back to Faith in Action. Our guest today, Mark Tuttle, President, Right to Life of Indianapolis. We've got a lot to talk about. I promised you a little teaser where I was asking you about statistically what kind of information we have from private doctors, how many abortions are done, and how many are done through the self-standing or independent facilities, right? But I remember this was 26 years ago, and I had what the medical profession would call a problem pregnancy. I was throwing up. I was sick. My doctor suggested, you know, we could very easily, I could just scrape. He said, I can scrape your uterus. I could do it real. And then try again next year because I was sick. And I couldn't, I remember thinking that my jaw was dropping as he was suggesting it to me. And this was simply because I was throwing up a lot. I had he didn't want to put me on more medication. And he didn't say an abortion. He didn't say a DNC. He said, we can just scrape your uterus. You'll be in bed for a few days and try again next year. That would have been an abortion.
It would have been an abortion, and it likely would have been gone down as a DNC,
right,
a procedure rather than an abortion. Uh-huh. And so that's the problem. We're
all
not
right
quite sure how those things get classified. And as I said, you know, there's a huge motive to kind of try to keep these things under the cover of
sure,
darkness to
sure,
a certain
sure,
extent.
Sure. Yeah, I guess
not that. Only, you know, not only by OBs and other people who are in private practice to deliver babies, but also by the abortionists themselves.
Sure, I get that. Okay, so we were talking about, we're chatting here with Mark Tuttle, President of Right to Life. several things I want to ask you. First of all, I know that you've had a contest, a little bit of a essay contest going on. Tell us a little bit about that. We're coming to the end of it, right?
Right. Yeah, we just finished up, and we're just now finishing up the judging of our essay contests, our oratory contest, and our art contests.
Art contest.
Art contest.
And wait a second. This is tell me about this.
Yeah, we have an annual art contest, and you know the entries this year were fantastic. So we always we have our annual dinner in September, and we always feature the winning artwork on the program of our dinner brochure there. So, but I was just amazed at the talent of the kids, and most of all, you know, we give them a theme: celebrate life. It's pretty broad.
Could be a rainbow.
And I'm amazed from the art contest and the essay contest both. The scope and breadth and maturity and understanding of these issues that these students have. They're incredibly creative, incredibly talented, but they're also incredibly knowledgeable about life issues and also very, very dedicated to the cause of life.
Now, Mark, when we're talking about the art, are we talking about posters or pictures or other forms of art as well?
Mostly paintings. So most of them are paintings. Some of them are pen and ink. Some of them are charcoal. Some of them are paint. A few photographs. But all of them very, very well done.
We just might be able to post some of those on our website. Eventually,
cool?
We will try and have the winners of the essay contest here on the air and share their essays with you. Kind of hard to share artwork on the radio, but we sure
We can describe it, put it on our website.
Right. So the contest is still being judged to a certain extent. So when we're done with the judging and all of that, we would be happy to do that.
Oh, I'd love that. Now, let me ask you this. You when we're talking about artwork, is there a possibility, is it all flat, one-dimensional, two-dimensional? Could it be a three-dimensional piece of art?
No, it's all one-dimensional. We did receive 1 year a photograph of a three-dimensional sculpture, but I think that's the closest we've ever come to a three-dimensional
art. All right. And we're talking grade school, high school?
These are high school contests, so these are high school artists.
And just with a broad brush of celebrate life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see that. I'd like to see those on our website. Jim, you got to work on that. Okay. All right. So let's talk. Oh, so we talked about the health surveys already. Okay. And you said that was public information.
That is public information. A lot of what's out there, the state collects, and it's there for people who request it. So that's one of the things we do at Right to Life of Indianapolis.
Just kind of shine a light on this?
We shine a light. We function a bit as a watchdog organization, keeping an eye on the abortion industry through what's there on the public record.
Okay, so when this information comes out, is there ever a possibility that a medical licensing board could review this information, and having nothing to do with life or death or abortion or pro-life or Catholic or Protestant or whatever, but is there ever a possibility that the Medical Licensing Review Board, with just that information, could revoke a license based on the information they get back?
Well, like anything with government, this is a long, convoluted process. But what happens is the Department of Health is responsible for inspecting and surveying the clinics. If anything, and they work with physicians, they work with the doctors to correct any deficiencies. But if there's something chronic, if there's something that's been going on a long time, they will make a recommendation to the Attorney General. And the Attorney General will then decide whether to file administrative charges or criminal charges or whatever. You know, there's a wide range of what the Attorney General can do with it. Based on that, then there's a recommendation made to the Medical Licensing Board to suspend licensure, to revoke a license, or any other type of penalty that Medical Licensing Board has the ability to
Now, Mark, we started a program talking about the organization itself, Right to Life of Indianapolis, and it sounds like you do operate super efficiently there, but still takes some funding to make it all work. Where does that come from?
Private donations. So we exist off the generosity of other pro-lifers in the community. And we have our annual dinners, our big fundraiser. But beyond that, it's people who, through the generosity and passion for life, want to be a part of what we do.
And there's a website where people can do that?
It's rtlindy.org. So rtlindy.org.
And they can actually donate there?
Yes, they can.
You know, I got a little blurb through an email, and I can't even remember who sent this to me, but it was talking about the Teens for Life at Garen.
That's correct. That would be us as well.
Okay, so tell us about that.
We really have three focuses. So as I mentioned, we're a watchdog organization. We also try to do what we can to build the pro-life community. So building up a pro-life community in central Indiana, that's a major focus. That's why we're at the State Fair. That's why we're at Black Expo. And that's why we do what we can to support 40 Days for Life and the other pro-life initiatives in the community. The third thing we do, our third focus, is really youth. And that's why we have our student contests. We have Teens for Life clubs in between 15 and 20 schools, depending on the year. It kind of comes and goes. And we just had a forum. We invited in the Students for Life of America's regional coordinator to help the kids who are involved in these clubs gain some leadership skills, be able to recruit other students for their clubs for the next year, deal with problems they might have from the administration. So it was sort of a forum where the kids could get together, exchange their own stories, meet each other, but also get some valuable guidance from a very, very talented representative of Students for Life.
You know, we Right to Life does so much, and it's so it has such a broad umbrella. I wonder if you could give us, because we hear so many sad stories. We hear so much negativity, and we get beat up so much from the mainline media. I wonder if you could give us a story, some feedback or some positive story that you've heard. Tim is always saying, we've got great stories to tell you. He wasn't able to be with us today. I'll snag him in the next couple weeks. He'll come back. But give us some uplifting, some hope.
I'd be happy to. I was out in front of Planned Parenthood with a 40 Days for Life event just last week. The regional coordinator for 40 Days for Life, actually, I think he's the national coordinator, came down to give a training session, but he had a small prayer vigil there the Friday before he was going to speak. And so we were there. There were about 30 of us praying. And one of the women came out of the clinic as we were finishing up and said, you know, I just want you to know, I heard you guys praying. And because I heard you praying, I couldn't go through with it. So those types of stories happen very frequently. They happen often. And, pro-lifers are making a difference.
Yeah, we need to hear that. We need to hear those kind of stories of encouragement and positive. You know, Jim and I did something kind of groundbreaking and history-making for Catholic Radio. We had a live, at the Knights of Columbus, a live kind of, I don't
remote
know what you
broadcast.
Call it. A live remote broadcast. He's been in the business so much longer than I have. But, two things came to mind. Jim had one and I had one. I thought of going to the State Fair and parking ourselves near the Right to Life booth. I thought that would be fun to kind of capture people there. And then Jim came up with an idea that, heck, maybe we could go out to either Fortnite for Freedom, 40 Days for Life, some sort of rally out at the center, at Parenthood out there, and talk to some of the people that are there. Because the wonderful thing that I like about it is it's not just Catholic. I mean, we don't have a corner on that. They're just faith-filled people that believe in life.
Yeah, people who believe in life, and not even necessarily religiously faith-filled people. There are groups out there of pagans for life, atheists for life. Oh, yeah. You know, this is a human rights issue at its core. I think once you realize that baby in utero has its own unique DNA. If it's a male baby, it has a different gender than its mom. This is a unique individual human being whose life is threatened. You don't need religious beliefs to realize that baby deserves protection. And a lot of people who they're not religious, but they've seen that and they realize that.
Yeah, I notoriously, famously have a brother-in-law who is an atheist, and he says he's an atheist and he is the number one. He's worked at the Right to Life in Oregon, and he provides baby. He goes and collects baby clothes and booties and diapers and all. And he has marched. I mean, he's in the front of the march, and yet he is an avowed atheist, but he just says it's what's right is right, is right is right. We just have a couple minutes left. Our guest today, Mark Tuttle, president, Right to Life of Indianapolis. Oh my goodness. I'm going to cede the last minute or so to you. What else do you have going on that we have not even talked about yet?
Well, we have not talked about our summer fairs coming up.
So okay, let's
during
talk about
the, during the summer, we have booths at Black Expo. We have booths at the State Fair, and we have booths at a couple of county fairs as well. And we always need volunteers to help us. So if you're listening and you're able and want to meet some of these wonderful pro-life people, want to collect some of these pro-life stories, give our office a call. Our phone number is 317-582-1526, or you can go to our website, rtlindy.org, and please volunteer to help us with some of these fairs this summer.
Let me ask you a quick question. Black Expo, does it look much like the booth at the State Fair? I mean, do you have bumper stickers, and what do you have? I mean,
We do focus them fair to fair. So we actually have two booths at Black Expo. One is completely dedicated to the problem of abortion as a form of black genocide. So we have a documentary film that we try to distribute, and we also talk to people about that issue of black genocide.
You know, Eric Slaughter is such a wonderful, I mean, he's a cheerleader, a rah-rah cheerleader. I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he left for a period of time and he's back. But everything he posts is either on protecting women, protecting life, protecting the faith. I mean, he's incredible. He ought to be manning one of those booths. I'm just saying.
He volunteers a lot to help us at those booths. And yeah, he is quite the gem and the gift to the pro-life movement.
All right. Our guest today, Mark Tuttle, president, Right to Life of Indianapolis. God bless you for being here today. I think you ought to come back quarterly and give us an update.
Oh, I'd love to.
And I'm just going to give a little teaser here. I'm just going to put out a little teaser that maybe Mark Tuttle, you will hear more from him in a different forum in the next few months. Tune in. I'm just saying. God bless you, and may the Lord's peace be with you.
May the Lord's peace be with you.
You've been listening to Faith in Action, underwritten by St. Vincent Health, providing the spirit of caring through 20 health ministries that serve 46 central Indiana counties, and by Marion University, offering Catholic and academic excellence in the Franciscan and liberal arts traditions. To suggest a guest or a topic for this program, call us at 317-870-8400.
May the Lord's peace be with you. May the Lord's peace be with you.